Please stand with me for the gospel reading. The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to St. Luke. Glory to you, Lord. And he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate, for this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. The Gospel of the Lord. Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to be with you. This morning, we are continuing our series looking at the virtues of Jesus. The virtues can be summarized in this way. These are the things we see about the character of Jesus. His love, humility, patience, obedience, wisdom, courage, and justice. These are the attributes to the personality, to the character, to the values of who Jesus is. So we've been taking the season of Lent, which is 40 days of preparation for Easter, to really give emphasis to that, to just look at the heart of Jesus, to see what his values are, because we, as Jesus followers, want to have the same values. Now, this Sunday's reading is the parable of the prodigal son. I prefer to call it the parable of the prodigal sons, and we'll talk about why that is today. And I think what we get the opportunity to do today is to see both the patience of God and the wisdom of God in how he responds to his two sons. Now, when it comes to this passage of Scripture, I was thinking about this week, I don't know if there's a single passage that has done as much for me as a person, as a follower of Jesus, as this passage has done. Like, it makes so much clear about who God is, and that's Jesus' intention, is to tell a story to help us see what is God like, what's God's heart, but also to see ourselves. Like, to see ourselves in such a way that we go, oh, this makes sense of me. Does anyone kind of feel about themselves like you're a bit of a conundrum sometimes? You're like, what is up with me? Why am I the way I am? I think this passage helps with that. And then it makes clear for us what is the salvation that God is seeking to bring to us. Now, here's how the parable of the prodigal son begins in verse 11. If you have your Bibles, please take them out. Luke chapter 15, beginning verse 11. It starts, there was a man who had two sons. So let's set the stage here. I know for many of us this is a well-known passage, but part of reading and studying the Bible is choosing to come to a passage as though for the first time. So let's set the stage of the characters. We have a father, a man, who is the father to two sons. From what we will see throughout the rest of this story, we will know that the father is soft-hearted, emotionally available, loving, and abundant in his provision for his children. This is a good man. And this man is meant to represent God the Father in Jesus' story here. Now, the two sons, there's an older son and a younger son. The two sons represent two different groups that Jesus is consistently relating to and addressing in his ministry. So if you read through the Gospels, there's these two groups that are consistently coming up against Jesus and interacting with him. The first is the religious person, which is the older son. And the second is the sinner, the younger son. Now, in reality, there's always actually three groups interacting with Jesus in the Gospels. The religious person, the sinner, or the person who's in need, and then the disciples. The disciples should hear this parable, which I would hope you see yourself in that category, should hear this parable and see yourself in both brothers. And to be honest, we could probably see ourselves in the parent role as well, if you have kids or grandkids. This is a part of us that when we see this, we see these two sons, we see the religious person who is that part of us that is the rule keeper, who likes structure. And then there's the part of us that is like the younger brother, questing to fulfill our desires. It's our duality of that wanting structure and wanting freedom. Can anyone relate to that? This story unveils how those parts of our hearts see and interact with God and how God is seeking to interact with those parts of our hearts. Each of them has a core belief about their father that informs a wrong belief about themselves that dictates the path of their whole life. It's wildly an epiphany, this story. I actually think it's one of the greatest stories ever told in the history of humanity to help us understand who God is and who we are. Now, the star of this show is actually how the patience and wisdom of this father results in a celebration of love and forgiveness and reconciliation. That's the high point. Is that fair? And so really the father is the star of this show. And that's how you know it's a Jesus story. Because Jesus wants the Father to be the star of the show. So, that's our characters, verse 11. Verse 12 says, "And the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me.'" Such a big ask. Here's what the son is saying to the father. In that system of inheritance, of a father having holdings and having property and having wealth and then having children, there's a specific system of inheritance. And that inheritance comes when? When the father is dead. So this statement by the younger son to the father essentially is saying that, "I wish you were dead now. I don't want a father anymore. I want to be on my own, and I want you to give me the profits of all your hard work because I feel I deserve it." Now put yourself in the father's shoes for a minute. How does that feel? Does that feel great? And what's our natural response to that if our child was to say that? I wrote those words down, but I thought I should probably delete that, not say that publicly. Because our initial response to that is, oh, heck no. So what does the father do? Does he explode? "How dare you? I made this wealth. I made you. No. How dare you ask me for such a thing?" No, that's not his response. Instead, we see an extraordinary amount of self-control and patience in the fact that his response isn't even detailed in the story. We see wisdom on display, and we'll see how this gets worked out over time. What the father does, Jesus says, is he divided his property between them. So he gives it to him. Essentially, the father is saying to the son, "I'm not going to control your heart. I'm not going to force you to receive my love. I'm going to give you what you have demanded." Isn't that extraordinary patience? And notice he says he divided his property between them. So both brothers received their inheritance. Question becomes, what did they do with it? So as the story goes along, we want to keep both brothers in our minds, even though the main character is going to be about the younger brother and his descent into self-destruction. We want to keep both in mind. So verse 13 says, "Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had," so he doesn't waste much time, "and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living." The younger son's heart wanted nothing more than to fulfill his every desire. He viewed his dad as the thing stopping him from fulfilling those desires. He viewed God as the one holding him back from happiness. Sound familiar? So he leaves. He leaves his father's house. He leaves his father's country. He's like, "I got to get as far away as I can from you so I feel full freedom to do what I want to do." And what he does is he spends all of this inheritance he received from his father on every possible desire that he's had brewing up inside of him for however many years. What does the father do in this? Does he stop him from going? Does he chase after him? No, he lets him leave. Doesn't try to stop him. We don't see a big speech. We don't see a big intervention. We don't see any forcefulness. We see a kind of respect of the choice. The father saying to his son, "If this is what you want, then you can have it." Why? Because you can't force someone to give you their heart. Who's parented here? Show me your hands. Keep them up there. Who's tried to parent? That's Corey said. Right? Everything in you wants to make them trust you. Ever felt that? Just like, if I could just mold your heart the way I want, this would go so much easier for you, right? If I could force you to see my love and receive my love, I would. Anyone felt like that? But you can't. If you force it, if you try to force someone to trust you and love you, you end up treating them like trying to, you know, break an animal. And you cannot break a human heart and still be able to have this reciprocal love. You can't. It has to be authentically, internally chosen for it to really be love, doesn't it? Think of it in terms of romance. Can you force a romance? Now we're getting real uncomfortable. Right? That's, you know, in one way we could say that's creepy. Or that's inappropriate. Or that's really not good. Love has to respect the personhood of the other person. It has to be chosen. Has to come from an authentic inner place. Whether parent or romance or friendship. It can't be about obligation. It can't be about manipulation. It can't be about discipline. It has to be cultivated. So this is why the father has to let him go, is because in order to ever have his son, the son has to choose it, want it, give himself to it. In verse 14, we see the fruit that this kind of life builds. That if you have desire in you and the means to say yes to every desire, does that actually achieve happiness? Isn't that a great thought? To be like, if I had all the money in the world, all the freedom in the world, all the agency in the world, nobody could stop me, and any desire I had, I could instantly fulfill. Okay, think about that, because we all kind of subconsciously dream about that. If you could live that way, would you be happy? Because that's what we think. If I could just do this, then I would be happy. Now, there's actually books of the Bible devoted just to this idea. There's a singular person in the Bible who had this opportunity to kind of live like that. And his name was King Solomon. And so Solomon has wealth, he has power, he has wives, he has this huge harem, he has every sexual desire he could ever want fulfilled, he has every food he could want, he has all this respect in the world and all this wisdom and all these things. And he writes the book of Ecclesiastes, one of my favorite books. And the way Ecclesiastes starts is, everything is what? Does anyone know? Meaningless. The richest, happiest, most fulfilled person in human history, so to speak, goes, all of this is meaningless. None of it hits the spot. In theory, if having all the wealth and having all the freedom and all the agency to fulfill your desires worked, you actually wouldn't run out of money because you would find happiness first. But what we actually see in this story is the opposite. In verse 14 it says, when he had spent everything, so everything he had was spent in the quest for happiness, and he ran out of money before he found that happiness. So when he spent everything, then a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in, what's this word? Need. Need. Hear that for a minute. Need. Isn't that what's behind desire? I have a need. So here's the two factors we see. One, he spends everything. He spends everything and he's still in need. Two, this severe famine arises in that country because this world is broken. Because there's calamity in this world. Who's experienced that? Does everything go right all the time? No. So these are the two factors we see. So our desire and our need is always greater than we can actually provide for and is even greater than the creation can provide for. See that? The creation will fail to fulfill your need. Your wealth and your provisions will fail to fulfill your need. Would we say that that is true of our human experience? I feel that's true of my human experience. This is where I think many people today in our society are at. Now, I know we don't feel like this, especially because it's election season, so we're very aware of what's lacking and the mess. But here's the truth of our situation here in Canada. God has given us strength. We have ability. We have freedom to a large degree. We have one of the wealthiest societies. Again, I'm not saying we have a perfect country. But we have one of the wealthiest societies in human history. Little war, little threats. And yet, we find ourselves internally and situationally in desperate need. Is that fair? That's the human condition. So here's the question. Is the Son feeling this way because of some failure to love on the Father's part? You hear me? So this Son's state of need, is he in this state of need because his Father has not loved him enough? Can't hear you. No. Right? We wouldn't expect the Father to be doing more for that Son in that moment, would we? But isn't that what we tend to do in our society? Is that any need is because God isn't generous enough with me. Now, what do we see the younger son does? He realizes that he is going to need to work. That it's not all freedom. And that he's going to need to submit to some kind of structure to get some provision here. So verse 15 and 16 says this. So he went and hired himself out. Welcome to adulthood, we all think, right? He hires himself out to one of the citizens of that country who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. So notice some of the specifics of it. He hires himself out to a citizen of that country. Basically, the son is forced to find a master instead of returning to his father. And so, this is what we have. We have a world that's going, no matter how much I get my hands on, and no matter how much I trust in this world, I cannot seem to get my deepest core needs met. Agreed? So, I've got to meet these needs, and I can't seem to meet them myself, so I need a master I can trust, and I can work for, and that I can follow, that will help me. I need a structure. Maybe I need rules to obey. Maybe I need somebody to tell me what to do. And so there's all these systems available to us in this world. Join Islam. Try Buddhism. Do this. Do that. This influencer has a plan that you can buy for $50 a month, and that'll do it. Maybe vegan. No, carnivore. Right? On. This. That's our desperation. Sorry, I got a cough. Is we're trying to find that thing that will work. What those systems always require is maximum output or maximum input of you, all the hard labor. And what do we see from the son here? Does it then, you know, create a fruitfulness in life where he's like, now I have everything I need. Now I'm working for it, and now I'm rolling in it. Is that what we see in the story? No. It's not even enough to afford food. Feel that? All this work, and it's not even enough to survive. That's what I hear from people all the time. So it requires maximum output from you and then minimal return. So much so that he gets to this point where he's longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate. And then it says this, and no one gave him anything. So he loses all sense of himself. It's a full betrayal of his culture, of his belief systems, everything. He's left everything about his life behind, and all it's led to is this squalor. His country's gone, his people are gone, his family's gone, and what does he have to show for it? And so what does he do? He looks to others for empathy, for care, for love. Will you hear my plight? And what he finds instead is no one takes pity on him. No one had empathy for him. Nobody had any generosity for him. And it's this emotional pain point of realizing that this isn't working and I'm alone that finally wakes him up. It wakes him up enough. What does he consider first? His father. Verse 17. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? Listen to how Jesus explains that. When he came to himself. So he'd lost himself. And all this, I need to fulfill my desire, and if I fulfill my desire, I'll be happy. He lost himself. And his thought is, my father is safe. My father is generous in a world of selfishness and pain. And that perspective of seeing his father rightly for the first time has somehow allowed him to see himself for the first time in a long time. He comes back to himself by rightly seeing who his father is. This is the wisdom of the father's patience. If he would have forced his son to stay home and receive his love, would his son have ever been able to see it? Would he have ever been able to see the goodness of his dad if he was forced? Never. All he would have seen is the force. All he would have seen is the limitation. But what the son could see once he walked his way, walked his life, is he could then have some perspective on who his dad actually was. And seeing who his father is makes his heart start running towards him even without choosing. It just starts to move towards his dad. Now, verse 18 and 19 says, this is where he makes a decision. Oh, now that I can see who he is, I will arise and go to my father. And I'll say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And so here's the four things that we see here. The first is the son is rightly having the perspective to go, I have sinned against heaven. So this isn't what I was created for. I'm fighting all of heaven's plan for earth. I'm swimming against the current, going against the grain. This is the opposite of how I should live. And I chose this. I wanted this, and I was wrong. It's like an existential sin that I have sinned against the way the universe works, against God. That's some self-revelation about who you are. that this way of living, pursuing my desires and working for these other masters, is against the whole function of the universe. That's true seeing of oneself. And then he says, I've sinned against you. This is his plan to say to his dad, I've sinned against you. You loved me, and I didn't love you back. I rejected you. I stole from you. I abandoned you. I murdered you in my heart. And I left, not you. You didn't leave me. I left you. That's honesty about self. Honesty about the way you're living. And because of that, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. He's essentially saying, look, I don't deserve your love. I have no more entitlement here. I can see your goodness, and I can see that I'm not living in that goodness. So his result is, treat me as one of your hired servants. Essentially, let me gather up the crumbs under your table. You're going to hear that prayer in communion today. Let me gather up the crumbs under your table because I don't deserve to sit there. Grant me mercy. And he knows he doesn't deserve that either, but he can see that that's the way his father is. His father wants to show mercy. And so he's going to ask him for it. So verse 20 says, he arose and came to his father. So he makes this decision to run back to him. And the temptation, I think, is for us to see that maybe God has abandoned us in these moments, that God doesn't care, that God isn't helping, that God isn't intervening, but we need to feel that so that our hearts can run back to Him. We need to feel absence, but a recognition to go, it was me that created it, not you. It wasn't a lack of provision. It wasn't a lack of help. It wasn't a lack of love on your part. It's that I left you and said I could do it without you. But God's patience only lasts so long for us to see that. Here's where God's patience runs out. There's actually a moment where the time for patience ends. And it says this, while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion. Jesus is telling us that the Father always keeps an eye on the horizon for our return, for our repentance. But this isn't just we've walked away from God once, it's that I constantly do it all day and have to return to God constantly. But always God is watching, always God is waiting, always God is looking. And as soon as he sees the Son's shape appear in the distance, it says his emotions reveal his heart filled with compassion. And so what does he do? If you're wondering how God's going to respond to you, in your return to him, in your need for him, is he going to turn away from you? Is he going to be angry with you? Is he going to punish you? This is how God responds. It says he ran and embraced him and kissed him. This is what the maker of the universe is doing to little old me and you, is that in our turn back to him, he runs to us, embraces us, and pours out affection upon us. Feel, right now, feel that in your heart. God's love for you, compassion for you, enjoyment of you, and desperation to have you. In verse 21, the son breaks out in his speech. Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. And before he can finish the speech, the father cuts him off. The father doesn't let him complete the whole speech. Instead, the father says to his servants, bring quickly the best robe, put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate, for this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they all began to celebrate. This is what the Father, this is what God is waiting to do for you all along. Every little part of you that's run away, every little part of you that's following some master, every little part of you that's still trying to please yourself, God is waiting to give you this kind of love. And what does this love do? This is bigger, greater than any monetary inheritance. This is knowing that you're loved. This is knowing that you're forgiven. This is knowing that every part of you is accepted by the Father, and His heart is to provide for you. This is God's celebration. This is what God wants for every one of us. Now, verse 25 through 31 brings us back to the older brother. Now, his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound." But he was angry and refuses to go in. So here's the question. What is the older son actually mad about? Is he mad at his brother? A little. We're going to see a little. He's a little mad. He thinks his brother's a bonehead. He's got some good evidence for that. And note, like, if you think about our duality a little bit for a second, doesn't that rule keeper part of you hate the other part of you? The freedom part of you? It's like, look at the mess you made us. Look what you did to our week. We had big plans. And you ruined it, you know? Like, those parts of us war against each other a bit. It says, the father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, "Look, these many years I've served you and never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends." So notice, he doesn't actually bring up the brother first. What's the pain he brings up? Is that I've been working hard all these years and you didn't notice. So what we see in that moment is the older brother is just as far away from this loving father as the prodigal brother is. Just as relationally distant. He is serving a master trying to earn his love, trying to earn his provision. It's the same master that the younger brother was working for. Because he thought he had to earn through work and obedience the father's respect and love. And no matter how hard he worked, his master never celebrated him. Because here's the thing, what if the father celebrated him and said, "Wow, I'm going to reward you with this and reward you with this for all of your hard work"? Then that son would have believed that his father only values him for his hard work. So what does the father say to him? "Son, you have always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. So all of this time, all of this inheritance was yours. All of this relationship with me was yours. And you thought you had to earn it, so you never laid hold of it. You thought you had to achieve it, and all this time I was trying to give it to you as a gift. It was always on offer to you. I've already given it to you. But because you see it in your mind as needing to earn it, you've never been able to receive it and enjoy it." What would have happened if the father would have submitted to the son's internal system is that their relationship would have gone up and down based on how the son saw his performance. I can be close to my dad because I achieved lots. I have to hide from my dad because I'm not achieving enough. I've got a cold, so he doesn't want anything to do with me. I'm struggling with mental health, so God must not care, my father must not care about me. If it's based on performance, the relationship's not secure. So what we see in the end is that this is the human condition. All of us have parts of our lives that are running away from the one who alone can fulfill our desires. And simultaneously working to earn the love and acceptance and approval of someone who already wants to authentically give us those things as a gift. This is why life is so hard. Because we were made to be with our Father, not running away from our Father or trying to earn our Father's love. We're meant to be with Jesus, secure in the Father's love. This is what the gospel is offering. Is that for all those sons and daughters who feel far from God, whether they've been doing everything right or everything wrong, the invitation is come home. Come into my embrace, and I will love you, kiss you, clothe you, provide for you. That this, the good news of Jesus is, come home. Come home to real love. And you, for many of us, you may have felt like, where has God been while things have been so hard? In his patience and wisdom and desire to have your heart, he is letting you run to the end of yourself so that you can come to yourself. So my prayer today would be, for those of you that feel that way, today would be a homecoming. This table is prepared with grace that you would come find your true Father and your true self.